Hi, everyone. You're listening to In the Open, a podcast by Mental Health America, where we talk all things mental health related.
Hey, everybody. It's Teresa.
Hi, guys. It's America.
So today we're going to talk about how racism is a trauma. And a lot of people lately have been asking us, like, why are you talking about racism? I think that racism is a trauma, and traumatic experiences absolutely relate to mental health, but also identity and experiences are universal, and everything has something related to mental health because you can't separate anybody's experiences from their brains, right?
Well, I think it extends beyond race or ethnicity. That's, I think, where people get kind of stuck in saying, why would a mental health organization talk about racism? And the reality is that it's all connected. Because when you talk about identity, right, as an organization in general, psychology in general, it's around the development of the person, finding self-worth, knowing you have value, and all of those aspects of positive development are tied to how others see you, how you see yourself and others. And when that is questioned at a broader way in terms of society and things, it impacts your mental health.
So we historically have also talked about racism and other topics like this during Minority Mental Health Month, but we also went through a recent change.
For many people, I don't know if many people know this, but there was a woman named Bebe Moore Campbell. She used to work with the National Alliance on Mental Illness in Los Angeles, and she really pushed for more attention to be directed to individuals who were minorities. So one of the things that she really did, and with congressional movements and all, I say movements, but it ended up being that the National Minority Mental Health Month was established as a month of awareness in the year in July. And Mental Health America for the last couple of years has really made an effort to ensure that what we're doing is highlighting the needs of individuals who would identify as minorities. And this year, what we have decided to do is really push ourselves and push others to really think beyond the terms that are normally used. And we have now moved forward in calling July and observing the needs of individuals who identify in the past as minorities. I say in the past, in quotes, as Black, Indigenous people of color. And we've done that with a really very important distinction in one, making sure that people understand that the needs of Black and Indigenous people have oftentimes been overlooked and lumped together as to one big group of people. And that's not fair. And we've also been thinking about the ways in which everybody else that kind of falls into the spectrum of other would fall under people of color. And that's done also after some consideration and speaking with a number of folks in our community and in our partners. And there is this idea that as a person who identifies as Latina or anybody else that kind of falls into this other space, that we would be able to come together in some sort of semblance of cohesion. So that's why we have now moved forward in really calling July BIPOC Mental Health Month. So if you're interested, you can find that info on our website.
I think the interpersonal frame is like seeing people, right? Like seeing you for who you are. I think we all know what it's like to feel ignored or feel like your identity disappeared into something. And when you can say like, I see you for everything that you are. I see you for the hardship that you've lived through. I see you for the strengths that you have. Like, that's such a powerful thing. And so that lumping together is about that. It's like saying, I honor this part of you and we're not going to wash it down.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Instead of saying, no, in this time, we are going to celebrate Black culture, Latino, Latinx culture, Indigenous culture. I mean, my goodness. There are some cultures that American history has been awful about in terms of wiping away large swaths of people.
Yeah.
It's just like not been a good thing.
You're right. Like the whole term of of whitewashing. It speaks to all of the issues about why we want to change language, right? Also, too, you know, what Teresa was kind of getting at is that it is about personhood, seeing the person as a complete whole individual. And part of that is even seen in the work that we do and have done for numerous years, where we want people to really think about how media portrays individuals who live with mental illness. You know, for a long time, there was a very stigmatized way, and continues to be, but for a long time, there was this whole notion like, oh, you are mentally ill, you're psychotic, and all these words that are very denigrating. And the reason why is because the fact that I live with a mental illness doesn't define me as a person, right? I'm still a whole person. And if I'm not seen that way, then the only thing you see is she's bipolar or he's schizophrenic. And we don't want that. And in that same way, we want people to really start thinking about it's not just minority groups that are disproportionately affected, even though that's the truth. But again, you can't lump everybody together because minority is a quantifiable number, right? Yeah. It's a quantifiable phrase.
And you're saying something about feeling human or feeling like you matter. Like what happens when people only see the worst sides of me, like they only see a criminal conviction, they only see my mental illness, they only see the color of my skin, they only see
my gender,
my size, my eyes, the shape of my eyes, your accent.
Yes, your accent. And they're all judgments. It's really, that's the bottom line, right? They're judgments placed on you, most often formed by, in many ways, a lot of the media. You know, does that work for us? And we just accept it. So we have to counter these images and the language that is used to help people understand the larger impact that it has.
But racism and segregation and oppression as a traumatic experience is so insidious because people then experience violence. That itself is traumatic. But then there's an added layer that they ask, like Black people ask, where it's like, why did that happen? And it's because I'm Black. And every Black person experiences that, or Latinos. Well, like, okay, so I'm thinking about times where I have seen violence, and I lived in Los Angeles. So I remember early on growing up during Rodney King, but then I lived on Skid Row, and then I moved to North Carolina, where half my clients were Black. And one, when I would work in communities that were impacted by housing problems, homelessness, unemployment, there were always many more Black people among the people that I'm working with, you know? So you're like, what is going on? We know that systemically these systems have what people call overrepresentation of Black people because systems are set up to make sure that people have a hard time with having opportunity to climb up. And so is that, you know, how is that traumatizing for people?
So I would say this, a very important thing to think about that people can do a little more research on. What we're talking about is like the issues that are happening right now today, but these are historically set in place, these systems of oppression. And when you talk about why, the one that comes to mind is the belief of what Americans is, okay? And I'm saying this from somebody who is an immigrant. In speaking with immigrant communities and looking at the way that the world saw the United States is like, America is the place of opportunity. You can come here and you work your butt off and you will achieve greatness. That's the way that it's painted. Not so much these days, but that's the way it was painted. And what happens is, if you believe that, right, if you can, the idea, you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, and you can achieve whatever. That's not true for everybody. Yeah. I can work my butt off, but that does not mean that I am going to have the same experience as somebody who is my white counterpart.
Yeah. And that's right. That's the part that is traumatizing.
Yes.
Because you're like, it's again, it's the issue of like, what is it about me that makes it okay for people to treat me differently?
Right.
Like,
and you're questioning your self-worth and your identity, and to have to do that on a daily.
And struggle with finances, which are like living in poverty is a trauma. Mm-hmm. So those things aren't separated. It's hard because I have met a lot of white people who also live in poverty. So they're like, well, it's really hard for me too. And I'm like, yes, it is really hard for you. But how hard it is for you is not the same as how hard it is for other people.
Right.
And that's sometimes hard for people to understand. We see this with all traumas. It's like, you know, you talk to your family and you have your traumatic experience and they're like, well, whatever, like, that's how everybody is. And you're like, right. Thanks.
Right. It's that measuring, like, well, I have trauma. That's, your trauma is not as bad as mine.
Yeah. And you're like, what? All like, trauma sucks.
We can all start from the same baseline, you know, but our experiences very quickly force us to experience life in a very different way.
Yeah.
And like when you think about, when you talk about poverty, because I know that I've had some discussions where, you know, the question has been like, you know, I'm white. It's not like white people don't suffer. That's not the argument.
Yeah.
Even the idea of whiteness as a concept, it takes a lot for somebody who is white to be able to recognize what whiteness means and what whiteness means for them specifically. Because as a person of color, for me, that's a frame of reference that I'm very familiar with. That's one of the first things I do. You know, when people see me, they're going to ask me, oh, if they know my name, they automatically will say, oh my God, your parents must be so patriotic. I've dealt with that my entire life, which is fine. I've learned how to deal with it. But what makes somebody believe that because my name is America, my parents had to be patriotic? That's a very North American-centric view of the world, because there is a North, a Central, and a South America, right? So just in that, I've had to validate, you know, be like, no, not at all. Sorry, I just popped your little balloon there. My parents may be very patriotic. They didn't name me America because of that. Just in that frame, you know, where I have to rationalize to somebody about my experience already from the get-go is very interesting compared to my white counterpart, a woman similarly aged, whatever, that their name is Susan. No offense to Susans, but it already creates an image in the person's mind and how they are received.
We call those microaggressions, right?
Yes, it's microaggressions.
It's all the little things that people say that you don't think are as bad as the big ways that we see people get hurt. But they hurt because they just happen everywhere and they happen all the time. And it's also, I think it hurts in a way because it's so easy for people to just say things nonchalantly that you're like, oh my God, you don't even understand that what you're saying is not okay. Mm-hmm. And you and I were just talking about this with relation to sexual trauma. What was it that was a common phrase that you brought up? Just to draw parallels for people to understand. But you were like, oh, but at least he didn't do X.
Right.
That's an example, a parallel example of a microaggression that a lot of people can understand, where you're like, wait a minute, man, just because he didn't elevate it to this degree doesn't mean that what happened to me wasn't horrible and bad and didn't derail large parts of my life and have an impact, you know? So it takes work, I think, to be attentive to what you're saying. But also, I don't think the expectations for people to be perfect. Like, you're going to say stuff that is insensitive. It's just, but when somebody says that you're insensitive, you have to be like, I am sorry. I'm going to stop and like reflect on why what I said was super insensitive. Right. So I don't do it again.
I think many people may, for the first time, be really considering what their role is in their family, your community, and may come, you know, to some realization that they too are part of the problem. I mean, I accept that, you know, like I am part of the problem too, because, and I have to own it because, you know, I have dark brown hair, but if I colored my hair and went blonde, I could totally be white passing. So that allows me to walk into spaces without judgment, to be fully accepted, no questions asked. And that's part of my experience. So it is not about perfection. It's about growth. We have to push ourselves to grow, to be able to really think about the way in which we want to live our daily lives and how it impacts the lives of other individuals. Because that's what we're asking of people normally.
I don't know what your experience is in working with people, but there was so many times I was working with someone and the evidence of why their trauma wasn't just related to other things. It was directly related to the color of their skin. A couple of things stand out. I had a client who was a Domino delivery guy, and he would have to deliver pizzas to a white community. And every time he drove through there, the cops would get called and he would get tased. And one time was so particularly bad, they beat him up and knocked out his teeth. He got sent to the hospital. And I'm like, this guy is a Domino's delivery guy. He's bringing you your pizza. This literally only happens because he is black. And then the other one, and it just reminds me of all these images that we see of like people getting harassed and people getting hurt by police and in communities. The
and
other
killed
one,
by police.
And killed. Yeah. These, the everything that's happening, and it's black people have been fighting about this for a long time because they understand that their lives are at threat, which is what a trauma is, right? You have to experience a life-changing situation that makes you feel like you're not safe. And basically black people live that in America. But the other thing too was like, my husband is a defense attorney and he had a client who had a school ground fight, like at school, and the police were called on this kid and they stuck him in jail and charged him with he was playing like pretend with his fingers, like with a gun. And I think that they charged him with like some gun charge.
Oh,
and you're
Jesus.
Like, that's crazy. But this is how it happens. And I think that one of the things that they said was something like, well, you know, he's going to have three strikes anyway. So we might as well start him on his path or some crap like that. And you're just like, dude.
There are so many layers to this, to not only to this work in being anti-racist, but also the ways in which these are just part of the American system. And I'm saying American because we're only focusing on the on North America, United States of. And when you think about like, you know, this young black boy that is being charged, you know, it's more money in the pockets of individuals that are working to just simply make more money. They don't care. The more people are in jail, the better it is for them. The more black and brown people are in jail, the better it is for them. Because that's where they end up, right? So there's no questions asked. It's your value is nothing because you're black and brown and whatever identity. And you have no rights. You don't have money to get a good lawyer. Forget it that somebody's going to fight for you, right? And that's the thing, I think, when we think about the issues that are happening right now, black people and the black community have been fighting and have learned how to move and navigate through these systems to be well enough. But when do you say enough? Like, when do you say, I can't take this anymore? And that's when people that are standing in solidarity say, yeah, dude, why? Why is this not happening? Why do they have to put their lives at risk?
I think that's why it's so important for people to be what we call allies or friends, like someone who cares. Because when you're traumatized, like, that person in that moment can only think about how to be able to get to sleep and not have nightmares. And we forget that. I think it's like you forget, or you assume, well, oh, the Black community knows how to handle this because they handle it all the time. But that's freaking a microaggression. That is not cool. You do not see people anymore. You don't see that person and that little boy as scared, and you don't see his fear. You don't see his nightmares. You don't see the way that he can't literally walk down a street anymore without feeling unsafe because he is Black. Versus for women, because you are a woman and you are afraid of being sexually assaulted, or because of fill in the blank, right? I think we all can understand what it's like to feel afraid, but you have to ask yourself, like, are you practicing empathy? I think that's a good question that's, like, super related to mental health, right? Like, when you hear people's pain, are you practicing empathy and listening to support people in that process? Or are you making excuses? Are you dismissing or giving people advice about how to heal? These are ways that when you respond to trauma, like, it hurts because it's making the experience meaningless or less meaningful.
I think what's an interesting concept in all of this is this idea that in any kind of experience, person living with mental illness, a person who has contemplated or completed suicide, a person who is Black, a person who is Indigenous, a person who is Latinx, Muslim, anything, right, in that space. If it doesn't affect you personally, then you're like, oh, that doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. My family's never experienced that. It doesn't matter to me. So you turn a blind eye. You're like, oh, mental illness? No, my family wouldn't, that would never impact me. Being, you know, killed by a policeman, I wouldn't ever have to consider that. No, that wouldn't happen in my community. But that's where I think empathy is key. You do not have to have experienced all of these issues to try to understand and empathize, put yourself in their shoes to understand the worry, the fear, the anxiety, the depression that can be exhibited and felt by all of these people.
Yeah.
All of these people, including myself.
Yeah.
So I know this is a broad topic, and this is something that I'm speaking for Teresa. Both Teresa and I are very much committed to helping people think about as we continue to have the podcast and we continue to just really fight in the open, right? Have these very open conversations so that people can think about their emotions, think about their role. And, you know, we appreciate you, your willingness to sit with being uncomfortable and asking yourself tough questions to move forward and grow from that.
All right, friends and fam, keep on fighting in the open. We'll see you next week.
All righty. Bye.